Streaming 24/7.
Oh my God, it's better than I thought.
This is Radio Influence.
I got him!
From the White Trunks.
He heard it!
Beautiful!
Oh God!
That's beautiful, he's got it!
And he forced the count!
Whoa!
And here comes the submission! And it's all over! It's
nice.
All over! First round knockout!
Big
he's out! Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt!
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion! The challenger! Here we go!
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the May 9th episode of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Daniel Galvan. Come up here on this week's edition of the podcast. We're going to get you ready for this weekend's MMA. Of course, we have UFC 224 and Bellator 199 coming up this Saturday. Of course, the UFC down in Brazil and Bellator in San Jose. Also, this week's podcast going to talk about the deal that was announced on Tuesday. The UFC has done a streaming deal with ESPN Plus. We'll talk about various aspects of that. Plus, we'll get into a tweet that Flow Combat came out that I thought would be kind of interesting to talk about. Also, Michael Chandler being on the Joe Rogan podcast. Also, is Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz coming to Golden Boy MMA? We'll talk about that. Plus, going to have three interviews for you. Talk to Two Fighters. Are you fighting on Saturday's Bellator 199? Aaron Pico and Adam Piccolotti. Also, let you hear the interview I recently did with the man that's going to be on Friday's Unify card up in Canada, Pat Pitlick. But Daniel, how you doing, man?
Well, Jason, I am absolutely sweating. I kind of thought this was going to happen, but I never really looked at the dates to see if they would clash. But I already knew this Saturday was going to be a struggle between the fact you got to catch UFC 224 along with Bellator 199. But the same day, May 12th, I also have to work an RGV Toros game. And most importantly, at least to my parents, same day I graduate from college, Jason. So I literally have no idea how I'm going to handle all of the MMA and work and graduation stuff. But Saturday, May 12th is going to be a very busy day. And I have a feeling I'm going to have to wake up Sunday morning, order about 25 buffalo wings, and finish watching whatever I have out of Bellator and UFC.
Well, congratulations on graduating college. I know you've talked about that as well on this podcast multiple times, but also on Saturday on ESPN, you got the Lomachenko fight. He's on. So there's plenty of combat sports options on Saturday. That's why I think it would be kind of interesting just to kind of see how people will take in this MMA, and you look at the Lomachenko fight, are you doing the two TV TV computer set up to watch both the UFC and Bellator? Maybe the easiest thing is to go out to your local sports bar that's going to be showing the UFC pay-per-view, and you ask them to put on the Paramount Network. They probably will look at you like, what channel is that? Which I believe on DirecTV, I believe is 241, as I believe. But, I'll probably be doing the two TV setup on my living room.
Yeah, honest to God, based on my schedule, based on when my graduation is, I think I'm going to miss everything from Bellator live. And I'm just going to focus on buying the UFC pay-per-view, watching that live at my house, and catching Bellator in the prelims for UFC on DVR and on Fight Pass the day after. That is not how I romanticize this idea, where maybe you have two things going on, and you keep an eye on when Lomachenko is in the ring, because I'm not going to see much of that Lomachenko fight. I think, if anything, my consumption of that Lomachenko fight is how people react to on Twitter. In fact, that's probably going to be most of my consumption during fight night, as I'm sitting down in my graduation chair. I'll just have my iPhone out and I'll see everyone's witty tweets and all the GIFs live. But live, Jason, unfortunately, my game plan is pretty simple. I'm just going to drive home as fast as I can and watch the thing on UFC.tv. That's kind of my game plan, because there are some fights on pay-per-view that I really want to see live. And to me, there is still nothing like watching fights live. But this dream scenario where I think for most people, you're going to have to do the two TV setup or the one computer TV setup, I'm just not going to be able to partake in. But if I was going to give anybody advice, it would be get your laptop out, get your TV out and watch them both at the same time, because I think for the most part, they're, despite the fact that these events are running head-to-head, you're probably going to find a lot of happy mediums where there's only action going on in the cage on one of the two broadcasts, and that's the best way to do it without having to flip channels all the time.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll get into both these fight cards here later on in the podcast, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. I believe I saw the Lomachenko card starts at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday, so I'm guessing he probably fights 9:30 or something along those lines. So you just have to kind of plan that out, but it was on Tuesday morning. I don't think any of us saw this one coming, and it was a press release from the UFC that was simply titled "The Walt Disney Company's Direct to Consumer and International Segment and ESPN Reached Groundbreaking Agreement with the UFC for Media Rights and Distribution." This is for extensive live and on-demand content for ESPN Plus. For those who are not familiar with what ESPN Plus is, this is your streaming service that is $4.99 a month. I believe it's, you know, $49 and change for the entire year. Sports Business Journal article noted that it's a 5-year deal, $150 million a year. Daniel, if that figure is true, man, kudos to the UFC for getting this deal done.
Yeah, that is a big time win for the UFC. We can kind of talk about the negatives, which I think the negatives may be the distribution of your fight nights and maybe less and less eyeballs watching these 15 broadcasts per year. But when you talk about the positive, $150 million per year is a big, big, massive deal for the UFC, given that they still have plenty of their TV deal to go and sort out, where we talked about the negotiations. And Jason, I mean, you're pretty plugged in. What was the number they were throwing out ideally for their entire TV deal that they wanted this time around?
$400 million, which I thought a lot of people kind of – I don't think people even look at the streaming aspect of this. I mean, man, $150 million a year for streaming, that's an unbelievable deal. I mean, as I said – kudos. Now, this deal does go effect in January in 2019. Now, for our listeners who maybe are not familiar exactly what this is going to do, there is going to be live events that will be branded as UFC on ESPN Plus Fight Night. There's going to be apparently 15 of these cards. Additional things that will be on the ESPN Plus platform: Dana White's Contender Series starting in June 2019, a new original all-access series produced by IMG Original Content, exclusive pre- and post-event shows for the 15 UFC on ESPN Plus Fight Nights, non-exclusive access to UFC's full archive of programming, including historic events, classic bouts, and original programming, and additional UFC brand content, including UFC countdown shows, press conferences, weigh-ins, pre- and post-fight shows. Now, in addition to the live events, the content included in the ESPN Plus subscription, fight fans will be able to purchase and watch UFC fight passes and UFC pay-per-view events via ESPN Plus for a separate cost. You know, I think one of the things that you immediately think about from a consumer aspect. Now, for me as a consumer of UFC Fight Pass, I have UFC Fight Pass for UFC events. Sorry to the regional promoters that may or may not listen to this podcast or on UFC Fight Pass. I'm sorry, I don't have a UFC Fight Pass subscription to watch your content. It's just a bonus to me. And so I think what will ultimately happen is if I was a regional promoter who had a organization on Fight Pass, I would be concerned right now, because I think you're going to see in January 2019, a lot of people are going to drop their UFC Fight Pass subscription.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty good for the consumer of Fight Pass in that you are essentially going to pay, depending on if you go $7.99 or $9.99, you're going to pay less money for more live UFC content. You know, that is actually kind of a good plus. It's going to be interesting to see how much of that UFC audience makes the transition from Fight Pass to ESPN Plus. I feel like it's going to be a whole lot, but it's hard to know the mobility of people when it comes to these over-the-top services. And that's going to be maybe the early issue. It just depends for the UFC when it comes to viewership, because I do not have a sense on what ESPN Plus is going to be. It's obviously ESPN's answer to the future when it comes to having their own subscription service, their own over-the-top network. And I do wonder how successful it's going to be, because currently, undoubtedly, the UFC to me is the tentpole of the subscription service. I mean, I was aware of this service a month ago, because they now show a lot of the USL, the minor league for the MLS soccer league. They now show those games, but those games aren't really, I believe, a driver to get people to pay $4.99. For ESPN, the reason why they probably saw so much value here is UFC is a driver to get that $4.99 subscription. I really do think that hardcore MMA audience will move. I just wonder what that number is going to be. I think in the long run, the more I think about it, the better the deal sounds. But Fight Pass, the UFC should just be nice and stop it. Just stop charging people, because the thing that's going to happen here is a lot of people are going to move away, but a lot of us are like too lazy or too dumb, myself included, to figure or we just forgot that we're getting charged $9.99 a month. And there's going to be like a core group of like 50,000 people that are just charged $9.99 a month for like 5 straight years for no reason, like not even watching Fight Pass and just forgot to cancel their subscription. And that is the most evil thing, because the news here to me is Fight Pass is not worth $9.99, $8.99, $7.99, $6.99, worth less than $4.99, because the UFC is telling you today that they see 15 events per year. 5 cards per year plus the contender series is worth $4.99. So Fight Pass is not going to be able to compete with that. It is a bit of a loss for these promotions, but also I think most people think like you, and not very many people are watching those things on Fight Pass either way. So maybe those promotions can go about trying to garner an audience in a different way, potentially using other streaming services like YouTube or Twitch. But I think that for the one point of view is this deal signifies the end of Fight Pass. I would say I do not think we'll be seeing a 2020 broadcast from the UFC on Fight Pass, just because I don't understand how they're going to run this many fight cards when you plug in these 15 ESPN Plus fight cards and then also all the TV fight cards and then also the pay-per-view fight cards. I mean, there's only 52 weeks in the year, and it seems like the UFC is going to run a fight card every single week.
Yeah, I think for people who are like myself, or maybe hoping for, less UFC events in 2019, I doubt that's the case. I mean, you're talking 15 ESPN Plus, the number going around for their regular television partner, 24 is the number that's being thrown around that you hear. And then you talk about, say you do 12 pay per views a year. I mean, start doing the math. That's a lot of events there. But going back on the Fight Pass aspect, I mean, right now, I look at Fight Pass and what's the reason for me to have it? I mean, you're telling me, okay, I'm going to get some, early prelims. I mean, and how often are those early prelims that you're jacked up to see? Like you say, hey, I got to go out my way. I mean, maybe after the fact you'll watch it. I mean, during the summer, the big reason for me to have Fight Pass during the summer is a contender series. It's something I really like watching. I thought they did a great job last year. And you look at some of the names that are going to be on the contender series this summer. I mean, if you follow regional MMA, there's a lot of names that are really going to jump out to you. And I know Nolan King has done a great job of putting the reports out there, but I think, and you mentioned this, as a consumer of the UFC, you have to love this, because hey, instead of paying $10 a month, you're only going to pay $5 a month. And I think ESPN, I think this is just a kind of the start, but I also kind of think as a media consumption, are we just starting to get to the point where there's just too many streaming services? Like for me, I have a DirecTV subscription, which I think I pay like $80 a month. And probably the only reason I get a good deal on that is because I've been an AT&T customer for over 10 years. And I have Netflix and UFC Fight Pass. That's the only streaming service I have. I don't know how many more that you have.
Yeah, I mean, Cam Soda is obviously one of those streaming services that I now have just for the mixed martial arts. But it's a tough deal, because obviously that's the general direction we are heading in with consuming stuff. I don't know if we're heading there as fast as we like to as fast as it seems, maybe when you read articles and the way we discuss it, because there are still a whole lot of people with cable. The numbers aren't decreasing as fast as one would think, given the media climate and coverage of the situation. But the long-term outlook, it's pretty clear that if you are making content or if you're a channel or network, you need your own over-the-top service, because ESPN would be in a much better position today had they launched this 5 years ago. Because they're a bit late to the party, there is going to be a bit of a struggle there, because people are doing that belt tightening situation where they're already committed to Netflix or Hulu or HBO, bypass WWE Network, MLB. They already are a lot of things people are paying monthly for, and ESPN is going to have to provide that type of content to cause people to go $4.99. Now, I think $4.99 is a smart price. It really is. I think $9.99 was the original smart price for streaming services and stuff like that. But when that's the norm and you're a new ball player, you got to go lower. And $4.99 is real sexy. So the second thing the ESPN needs to do is they need to begin to put content on there that drives eyeballs. And I haven't been following every single thing they've been adding, but I do think the UFC is a property that does so. Again, it has a very hardcore fan base. It's not really – it isn't really fans aren't picking and choosing which games to watch, like maybe Major League Baseball based on their team. You know, a fan of mixed martial arts will likely be a fan of every fight card, maybe some less than others due to the talent level there, but they're not going to not watch, let's say, a random Cardinals and Brewers games because they're a Cubs fan. UFC cards are pretty universal among all the fans. So that's why it's a smart acquisition by ESPN, but it is going to be a struggle, and it is going to be really hard in this landscape where there are plenty of other subscription services. What I worry is, and by the way, you mentioned 12 pay-per-views, 24 TV events to go of 15. You do the math, that's 51 events. And there's just about one other week in the year. I know we'll probably have some of these doubled up with maybe one in international, one here, et cetera, but what I really worry for is they don't have the roster to do 51 good events per year. I mean, they probably have the roster to do 30 good events per year, to be completely honest with you. So I have a feeling the first couple ESPN Plus cards will look really awesome. And moving forward, I have a bad feeling it is going to get lost in the shuffle. And these are going to become very forgettable cards the cards that get very little traction in social media become forgotten. And that is potentially the issue. Is we talk about the thing I point to when we talk about maybe the declining Bellator ratings is the oversaturation of bad cards using the Bellator name maybe teaches people to no longer watch it. And while UFC already has that problem, there's a chance that this could really deepen that wound, especially if, again, they run 51 events per year. I don't think they'll do that, but that money talks. And 150 for 15 events, they'll likely get 200 million or 250 for their TV deal. And it's hard not to take that short-term money, especially when you're the ownership group they have now, where they're looking to cash in on all that money they already spent to buy the company.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to kind of see, and I think that, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they get, you know, television-wise. One of the things I did think about when I saw this number, you know, with everything that's going on with Leslie Smith, which I found very interesting. Dana White's comment this week on the UFC Unfiltered podcast was, that's not my problem, that's somebody else's problem, which makes me wonder maybe if someone had gotten to him and say, hey, we don't need you to talk about this, because then it can help build Leslie Smith's case in court. You have to wonder if there's fighters out there that are going, man, they've got $150 million for a streaming service. Where's our cut of this? That to me will be interesting to kind of see how this does play out long term. But I do feel the UFC is really in the second half of 2018. They're really trying to stock up these pay-per-views to get people, you know, a lot of reasons. You know, I think that, you know, Saturday's pay-per-view, it's okay. But you look at June's pay-per-view, solid. You look at July's pay-per-view, you know, solid. August, with some of the rumor matchups potentially, you know, looks to be a very solid card. But it's going to be, but I think at the end of the day, for the UFC fan, you know, if you can cut your price in half from $9.99 a month to $4.99 a month, you got to be happy with this.
Yeah, and talking about eyeballs, the negative is 15 live events on ESPN Plus. But reading the press release, there is a pretty big positive in here. It says ESPN will also bring a variety of UFC content on ESPN's widely consumed linear and digital platforms, including an exclusive 30-minute special on the networks previewing upcoming bouts and breaking down matchups leading to each UFC pay-per-view. That is a pretty big potential plus for the UFC, given that having these countdown-type shows or pay-per-view hype-up shows on ESPN or ESPN2, but specifically ESPN, could be a major, major plus and could be similar to what we were used to back in the day when they would run a killer UFC countdown show on Spike TV, and then that actually generated some buzz for the buy rate. So there is a win there, and the big win is getting in bed with the ESPN, because ESPN is still absolutely the top sports network, chain of networks, and being a part of that family, even though maybe there is some negatives when it comes to them losing popularity over the past few years, this is still an incredibly popular network. And at the end of the day, if you're a sports fan, unless you hate Stephen A. Smith or somebody like that, you just hate ESPN, right? And you have FS1 underwear. But if you're a sports fan and you end the day, you tend to put the TV on ESPN, or you start your day off with ESPN, and having the UFC logo on there more and more is a pretty big plus for the company.
Daniel, I don't watch much TV. I just don't. A lot of it's just because I have so much going on in my life. But when I do, turn on my DirecTV, 206 ESPN HD is, a go-to for me. But there's one last thing I want to bring up about this, and then we'll move on. And I want to know if this caught your eye in the press release, where it says, quote, "With more than 280 million fans around the world, the UFC boasts the youngest fan base among professional sports organizations in the U.S. with a median age of 40 and an audience comprising of 40% millennials." I would love to see the research on how they say 40% of their audience is millennials. Now, if you go to Wikipedia and the definition of millennial, like, I'm right there at the beginning stage of it. I was born in 1981. Obviously, you are a millennial. I would be interested to see how they came up with that 40% number.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, it's like millennials are starting to age out, and we're moving on to the next generation of the youngest. I would be interested in that number. I really, honestly, highly, highly doubt that. That they had. First off, I'm not sure if the median age of 40 would constitute the youngest fan base. I could be wrong, but
if you look at baseball's like it's 60.
Well, we know baseball isn't a part of the discussion. We know wrestling isn't. Hockey probably isn't. The big one is NBA. I feel like, do you have NBA's number?
NBA's got to be lower than 40.
NBA's got to be lower than 40. And UFC might not even actually be 40. I feel like it might not, man. But, I mean, UFC is certainly younger. It is hipper than a lot of the other sports. But to throw that line in there, I assure you, NBA has a lower median age, and they have a much more millennials watching their product.
And this is from a June 5th, 2017 article from the Sports Business Journal that said the NBA's has the next youngest TV viewership at a median age of 40, up from 40 in both 2000 and 2006.
So UFC's lower at 40 in that article.
Yeah, but the one thing I kind of look at is, if you think about the peak of the UFC, and so we're talking about that 2008-2012 range, think of that person that was 25-26, at that point, and where they are, now 12 years later, all of a sudden they're approaching. I think, as someone, and I've always said this, I think my view on MMA audience is a little different than other people in the MMA landscape, because of the fact of I do work for a restaurant group, and one of the restaurants we have is a sports bar that does show UFC pay-per-views. You see who comes in. I do think there can be a time where it is a struggle to get that younger fan. Especially when you're talking about a Saturday night, if you're 25 years old and you're a single man, do you want to be in a sports bar watching a UFC event, or maybe do you want to be in a nightclub trying to pick up a lady?
Well, yeah, I think that's a good point. I think the lady is the preferable option. Maybe once you're done and you fail at that, you can watch some. But you're right. I think that what's interesting is you talk about maybe your age group and when the peak of the UFC was. It's kind of similar to like how nostalgia – you always got to cash in on nostalgia, because now those people maybe have disposable income. Like, that's why we see stuff like on YouTube right now, a thing that's getting a lot of popularity, this show called Cobra Kai, which is like about the villain and Johnny and the Karate Kid.
Genius marketing by YouTube Red, by the way. Genius marketing. I watched episodes. Now, look, I'm old enough to remember when the first movie came out. The first two episodes they put up for free. And then, and look, at that time, me and my wife, we watched the first episode, thought it was good. Haven't watched the second episode yet. But the one thing that when I watched it, I was like, I had no idea how much YouTube Red cost. So I Googled it and saw it was $9.99 a month. And, I started kind of, I looked around at other things they had, and I was like, I don't see myself dropping $10 a month for YouTube Red. But I was like, man, that is genius marketing. Offer up two free episodes. And then all of a sudden, if you hook someone in for those first two episodes, you're like, well, crap, I guess I got to do at least 1 month so I can watch the rest of the season.
That's actually complete. You are right. That's completely genius. That is smart stuff. And that thing is getting a lot of buzz, man. And again, it's all those people. Maybe when they're young kids, they saw that movie. Now they're old enough to buy stuff. They have disposable income. They'll throw down $10.99 for just 1 month so I can binge watch this. Oh God, I forgot to cancel my subscription, and I'm on the hook for every month. I mean, that is generally the strategy for all these on-demand services, Jason, is to offer these outrageously great deals and just hope you don't cancel the subscription. Like WWE Network did this deal one time around WrestleMania season where it was like, for like $4, you get 3 months of the network, which is insane. $0.99 basically, and they're hoping that all that like a big percentage just forget to cancel and they get charged the regular price.
Oh, totally.
So yeah, basically the moral of the story is all these on-demand services are trying to scam you out of your money. Don't ever think, unless you are on top of things and you set stuff in your iPhone, don't get suckered in by these deals unless you are willing to pay the full price for this content, because that's how it works. And I read an interesting article about this movie pass thing that is taking off, where I'm sure you've heard of it, but it's like, it's basically like you pay a monthly subscription and you can use this debit card to just get free movie tickets, right?
And, I heard about that. Yeah.
That business model does not make sense at all to me. And the funniest part is it's just a debit card, by the way. And if you Google MoviePass, there's like people that are freaking out because they accidentally charge like some popcorn to their MoviePass debit card. Like, am I going to get charged for fraud? And then the comments are like, don't worry, there's like 5 employees there, don't worry about it. So yeah, you can theoretically scam it. And like, yeah. So hot tip, get a MoviePass debit card.
Speaking of that median age, I found an article from June of last year. This is from MarketWatch.com. Now, the UFC is not listed. In their table, they had the average age in 2000, then 2006, and then 2016. If I told you the PGA Tour had the highest median age, you would say?
Absolutely. It'd be like 72.
64. LPGA,
damn, that's crazy.
LPGA and horse racing are tied for second highest median age at 63. The lowest was 40 with the MLS. NBA, 42. NHL, 49. Boxing, 49. NFL, 50. College basketball, 52. College football, 52. Olympics, 53. WTA tennis, 55. WNBA 55, MLB 57, NASCAR 58, and ATP tennis 61 years old.
So they don't even have MMA listed in the article?
Yeah, this was from last year. And I'm sure that's probably more of because they probably haven't done the research maybe in 2000, obviously not in 2000, and maybe not even in 2006. But I would be interested how they came up with that 4 out of 10 people watching the UFC is considered a millennial.
Yeah, that's interesting, as well as where do you think they got the 280 million fan number from?
The only thing I can maybe think of is looking at how many homes the UFC product is available in across the world.
That's some funky math. By the way, have we ever figured out how many people are subscribed to Fight Pass?
They've never come out, but a number that I've heard float around is 400,000. But that's all speculative number. I mean, the only people that know that real number is in, is in the UFC. I have a Fight Pass subscription, but I rarely use it.
Yeah, me too. And this is just a wake up call for me to unsubscribe.
I did look the other day because I knew that deal I bought back in December was coming up and it expires June 3rd, which I figure I'm just going to cancel at that moment. And then I'm going to see if they give me that same deal that they gave me back in December, where I paid a one-time fee of like, I don't know, like $86 or something like that. And I got a UFC pay-per-view and 6 months of Fight Pass.
I think you're definitely going to get that deal, but maybe not. Maybe they're shifting all those employees to work on ESPN Plus. Again, I just feel like Fight Pass, you can start digging the grave, because even it seems like they're going to put a lot of their library on ESPN Plus also. You know, they said non-exclusive library or whatever is going to be on there. So I just hope the UFC does the decency of shutting down the thing so people don't get charged for it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting how many hours get viewed of just the fight library, but we'll see. But we still got a ton of more things to get into here on this week's podcast. I did want to mention this Flow Combat tweet that was sent out on Monday of this week, and it was they did a MMA version of something that was on Barstool Sports, and it said, "Take a pill, acquire skill, pick two," and there was 12 options here. Number one, H-bomb. Two, Connor's left. Three, Barboza's kicks. Four, Anderson's defense. Five, DJ speed. Six, Jones wrestling. Seven, Overeem's knees. Eight, Khabib's grappling. Nine, GSP's jabs. 10, Hunt's chin. 11, Edgar's heart. 12, Maya's submissions. My number one pick for this was pretty easy. Was it easy for you?
It has to be Khabib's grappling, right?
Yes, no question.
Yeah, that's like the most well-rounded thing, by the way. Like, everything else is either a single strike or an attribute, but grappling covers everything. Takedown, wrestling, and it's so fresh in our minds how good he is, too. I think that there's also some bias there, but if you're making a fighter and your goal is to win fights, not picking Khabib's grappling is just – it's insane, because – I would say his grappling alone is better than Jones's wrestling.
Now, I have a feeling we're going to differ on our second option. Now, full disclosure, we have not even talked about this. So, but I'm guessing we're going to disagree on or have different options for number two. I will tell you my pick, Anderson's defense.
Interesting. I saw that and I understand why. Because once you have the grappling, you have to look at the striking. And you either go contend or defend, survive or not. I understand Anderson's defense a lot, but I still think in mixed martial arts, a very important part of defense is offense. Just keeping guys busy, keeping guys guessing, that opens up for the takedown. So I like the defense. I think Khabib with Anderson's mannerisms would be the greatest thing in the world, where he's just dancing around and stuff. But I went the other end, and I went GSP's jab. You're not going to get any knockouts there. But I like the offense that brings. I mean, what else? What else kind of stuck out to you other than Anderson's defense?
Connor's left.
Connor. Yeah, I feel like if you're going to go with the H-bomb or Connor's left, you should absolutely go with Connor's left. What's the thing nobody's picking? Edgar's heart? All these guys have heart.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Edgar's heart. Overeem's knees.
Yeah, that's another one.
I mean, the other ones, I mean, look, they're I mean, look, if you take Khabib's grappling, that knocks out Jones's wrestling. I mean, Barboza's kicks, I mean, look, if you were going to build a dream fighter when it comes to kicks, Edson Barboza would be who you pick. I'd be interested to see kind of what our listeners, what their picks are, because as we said, I think both of us, we agree, if you're going to start off, one of the pills has got to be Khabib's grappling. But then after that, I think you could probably put 10 guys in a room, have them pick, their two pills, and you'd probably get 10 different answers.
Yeah, absolutely. What would be the most entertaining fighter if you're going to pick two? Just the guy you want to see fight.
Hunt's chin and maybe the H-bomb?
That's pretty good. I'm just going to go. I don't care about the chin. I don't care if this guy gets knocked out. I'm just going to go. And I guess, man, are they two different hands? I'm going to go H-bomb and Connor's left.
Well, H-bomb is a right hand, so.
Yeah. I would just go with two dynamic punches and just this guy either gets knocked out or he gets a knockout in 1 minute. But, you guys tag us in a tweet and let us know if we're stupid, but let us know whose fighter would win. I feel like mine would absolutely beat Jason, so.
Yeah, I saw somebody the other day, I don't know if it was a fighter or a journalist, where they kind of put out there, like, you know, perfect fighter, which they went down every aspect of MMA. But yeah, be interested to hear what our listeners think. On Monday, I was at the gym and I was watching Michael Chandler's appearance on the Joe Rogan podcast, which I thought was a really fascinating conversation. Of course, Michael Chandler set to become a free agent at the end of next month. Currently, he is negotiating with Bellator. I think he's pretty much made it clear that, this is a business, and he's got to do what's best for him. You know, listening to him on the Joe Rogan podcast, I thought Joe was kind of like trying to throw it out there. Hey, you need to come to the UFC. Look, if I think the UFC and Bellator offers were the same, I think he goes to the UFC.
I think he does too, man. And it's as simple as the idea of the grass is always greener on the other side, but it helps if, you know, the grass is actually greener on the other side. And in mixed martial arts, aside from Ben Askren and, I don't know, Cole Conrad, if you spend the vast majority of your career not in the UFC, there is a big time allure to prove yourself in the UFC. So for literally most guys, I would say in the back of their mind, even money deal from both sides, they take that UFC offer. Now, I don't think that's going to – when it comes to negotiations, I actually don't think the UFC is going to offer Chandler whatever Bellator does. Just because for the UFC, Michael Chandler is just another top lightweight. For Bellator, Michael Chandler represents their best homegrown talent. Maybe not their most marketable. Absolutely not their most marketable, but their most – the one they can be proud of, that they developed this guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's – you know, one of the things with Chandler, and I'm sure this is probably something that he's thought about, is that you look at his position, lightweight is not what welterweight is in Bellator. You know, and if he wants to, you know, prove that he's the best 155 pound in the world, it's going to be really tough to do that in Bellator just based on, you know, who you could potentially fight. I mean, Bellator's got a great 170 pound division, but, you know, 155, it's not there. During that interview, he did talk about how he'd love to see 165 pound weight class. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with Michael Chandler. I think that, you know, from a competitive aspect, you would love to see Michael Chandler in the UFC. How would he do against some of the top guys in there? Of course, you know, we saw his two fights with Eddie Alvarez in Bellator. And of course, we've seen what Eddie's been able to do in the UFC. But at the end of the day, I just want Michael Chandler to get the most money he can.
Yeah, and I know you're a big Joe Rogan guy, right? You're one of those Joe Rogan guys who, you know, you buy all those, like, things he peddles, you know.
I like listen to his – I always try to listen to his MMA podcast. His regular podcast, you know, I may catch an episode here or there. They're just so damn long, man. They're like 3 hours long.
Now, my question is, was this the first Bellator fighter he's had while they're under – Bellator contracts?
I don't think so. I think he's had other guys come in there.
Yeah, I'm sure. You're probably right. Especially
look, it was an interview that if Bellator, I don't think Bellator set it up. I think this was through probably Chandler's representation, but which I'm sure was probably done maybe to kind of, you know, introduce himself maybe a little bit more to that casual UFC fan. But if Bellator had set that interview up, I'm sure they wouldn't be very happy with how it went, because it was very much about, hey, don't you need to come to the UFC?
Yeah, totally. And that's the perspective Joe Rogan's looking at. But it's also like it's a very real perspective, because is that not if you're a mixed martial arts fan, is that not the thing you wonder about Michael Chandler? There's a few matchups in lightweight division, but not really. And it does help, though, from Belcher's point of view, that, you know, maybe Chandler is on an incredibly popular podcast. But maybe next time, get the guy on when he's promoting a fight. Focus can be on the Bellator card, not so much when you're leaving.
Yeah, I thought one of the most interesting things that Michael said, where he talked about visualization, and he said that early on in his career, he just didn't do it. But now what he does is, you know, he goes into a room for, you know, 5-10 minutes, and he thinks about his fight. And he says, you know, you really don't realize how long 5 minutes is until you're just like sitting in a room and there's a countdown, and you realize of how long it is. You know, he asked me for my prediction. I think he remains in Bellator.
Why do you say that? Just because the money is going to be a lot more from Bellator?
I think Bellator will be more willing to put more money on the table than the UFC would. But, you know, how much, you know, you do wonder, you know, Chandler's 32 years old. You have to, you know, look, there's no guarantees in the sport. You got to try to get the most money you can right now. But if his ultimate goal is to prove he's the best lightweight in the world, his mindset's got to be, I need to be in the UFC.
Absolutely. And the thing is, if you have that self-belief in yourself, you are super, super confident that you are the best lightweight in the world. Maybe taking less money for the UFC is going to be more lucrative long-term, just because becoming a part of that elite in the UFC lightweight division is likely going to lead to a windfall of money, especially if on your next contract you can negotiate pay-per-view points. But that only happens to one or two guys at a given time. But surely someone as talented as Michael Chandler believes that he's the best 155-pound fighter in the world. And that's why I think, even if it's less money, I do think he makes the move to the UFC.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens here. Final thing to mention before we get into the interview portion of the podcast. Late last week, we get another teaser about Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz 3. But the interesting part about this was Golden Boy looking to get into MMA, which I found kind of interesting. But, you know, once again, I know we've talked about this. I just hope there is someone around Chuck Liddell that is talking some sense into him about not fighting.
Yeah, I think he's going to fight, man. You read all his quotes. I mean, this guy seems gung-ho about fighting, which is a shame. I'm not looking forward to this. I feel like it's probably going to happen. It's really weird when you just Google Oscar De La Hoya side by side. You have De La Hoya finalizing contracts for Chuck Liddell comeback, and Oscar De La Hoya in cocaine and alcohol sex extortion case FBI admission. That's a while, too. I feel like the second is about, like, I could have sworn there was some random rumor going around or some news reported that, like, somebody recorded a porno with Oscar De La Hoya and they, like, started selling it, but then somebody bought it and, like, is like he's this Avenger who just buys stuff and never publishes it. I don't know. That's like a somebody told me the news and I heard it from somewhere else. But anyways, moral of the story, Golden Boy, get the hell out of MMA. All you're going to do is put people in danger, and I don't want to see this fight. No one wants to see this fight. Some people kind of do, don't get me wrong, but for the greater good, let's not put Liddell in the cage again.
Seems like a money grab.
Yeah. Does that put pressure on Bellator to do this?
I tell you, it sounds like Bellator's just not interested. You know?
Thank God. There are like two guys that we just know should never fight again. Chuck Liddell and Jens Pulver. Well, there's like 47 other ones, but those two, and Jens did fight after his exit in the WEC, but those two kept on getting knocked out and knocked out and knocked out and knocked out, and it was uncomfortable to watch them fight.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's just some of those fighters just like, man, I just don't want to see his fight. Yeah, Jens Pulver, last time he fought was in 2013. Fought in Superior Challenge 9, lost a decision. Of course, he had an obviously awful run, but Jens Pulver's just one of those guys. You can't write the history of MMA without mentioning his name, at least in my opinion. But hopefully that Golden Boy MMA thing with Chuck Liddell T. Ortiz does not happen. But right now, we are going to get into the interview portion of the podcast. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Aaron Pico. Of course, we'll be fighting on Saturday night, Bellator 199. He takes on Lee Morrison. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Adam Piccolotti, who is going to be taking on Carrington Banks in a lightweight matchup at Bellator 199. And then you're going to hear my conversation with Pat Pitlick, who is going to be taking on Derek Boyle on Friday night at Unified MMA 33. Hey, Aaron, man, I appreciate you giving me some time out here as you get ready for this fight. How's things going, man?
Hey, everything is good, Jason. Just I'm on the decline, obviously, in my training. Nothing really hard right now, just staying in shape, keeping my weight down. But everything is good. I'm relaxed, calm, and ready to fight.
You know, I think when a lot of people think of your name, they think about the hype. They think about, you know, various aspects of what's been written about you. And, you know, and it makes me wonder, do you at all feel pressure or consider, the pressure that people have put on you?
Honestly, I mean, yeah, of course, there's a lot of hype behind me. But like I always say, I don't apologize for winning. I have accolades to back that up. I was a world champion in wrestling. I was close to making an Olympic team. I've had lots of boxing experience. I've had MMA experience as an amateur. So there's no doubt about it. I can't apologize for winning. I can't tell the people what to say. This is what they say about me. But my job is, of course, you feel nerves. Of course, you feel a little bit pressure. That's normal. I'm human. But the only thing I could possibly do is train and stay focused and win fights. That's my job. Everything else that people say, that's on them. If it's good, thank you. If it's bad, thank you. And I just stay in my lane and train. That's all I do.
This is your fourth pro MMA matchup in 11 months. How would you describe the last 11 months for you personally?
It's been great. I feel like I've come a long way in a year. I haven't even been a pro a year, and I feel like the gains that I've made are just through the roof. I have so much more to learn, and coming off that first one to what I am now is just there's a big difference as far as my whole calmness, knowing what to expect. And like I said, the only thing, it's all uphill for me, because I mean, I just gotta stay focused. You know, time is my friend, and I just get focused and keep going. You know, but in 11 months, four fights, I've come a long way.
In terms of, there's a lot of compliments that have come your way throughout your, you know, MMA journey, and particularly obviously your two wins, the just unbelievable knockouts you had. What is the best compliment that you have received about your performances?
Man, yeah, just a lot of. I think the coolest thing that I've seen is just being on SportsCenter for a knockout. That's really cool, because obviously I watch ESPN SportsCenter, so to see yourself on there as one of those highlights is it's probably a really good compliment in my eyes. But yeah, it's that's probably the best thing.
Now, did you get any compliments about your dancing abilities following a knockout win?
Yeah, a lot. That's funny. I mean, that's just a lot of people are like, "Damn, I can't believe you did that." You know, did you plan that? But it's just like, no, not really. It just, I've watched bullfighting. I'm around horses. I like bullfighting, and it's crazy, a crazy art form, and it just kind of flowed naturally. And it's just like kind of stuck. That's every time I see certain people, they come up to me and start pretending like I'm a bull, and they start trying to be like a matador, and it's just like I didn't realize it was gonna be that viral. They start making dances over it, and it's all good. It's all fun stuff. I remember on Instagram I saw that dance video, and I just couldn't stop laughing because it was just it was creative. But yeah, I can't believe how much it stuck. But hey, it's all good. This is all fighting is fun. It's crazy, but you know, you just gotta have fun with it.
They talk about feeling comfortable on fight night in the cage or in a ring. If you already do feel comfortable, do you remember the moment when you realized that you were comfortable with doing this?
Yeah, I think the last fight that I had, I just remember just soaking it all in, being in the cage and just breathing, just breathe, look where I'm at, feel the cage, look at my opponent. And ultimately, listening to my coach, Antonio McKee, you know, he preaches a lot to me. Just stay calm, stay relaxed. You got power. You're good on the ground. You're good on your feet. So just relax. If you need to take a breath and back up and use your jab, just relax. And, you know, listen to the crowd listen to me. Listen to what I'm saying. Don't listen to the crowd if they're booing this or that. Just stay in the zone and do what you do, and you're going to be perfectly fine. And every time I'm in training and sparring, I just, you know, I get in the zone. I just got to figure out, okay, I'm in the fight. I'm relaxed. And just biggest thing for me, like I said, relax and let my hands go. You know, not try to rush in like I did before, and just absorb all of it. Like I said, time is my friend. The more time I get, the more comfortable I get. It's just going to come with age.
Lee Morrison, the opponent here, a veteran of the sport. He's won four fights in a row here. You know, before you get this fight offer, were you even familiar with him?
No, I wasn't. I saw that he's had a ton of fights. But I feel confident. I'm very, very confident in my abilities. Like I said, I've made so many gains in the year. I haven't even been a professional a year, and the gains that I've made are just I'm really coming along. I'm only getting better. I'm 21 years old. I love what I do, and I have a passion for it. So I feel very, very confident in my abilities, and I feel confident in my coaches. I have great, great coaches that monitor me, and they're just helping me get better. I'm working with Jason Manley, Antonio McKee, you know, Freddie Roach, Bob Cook, and if I just stay focused and I love what I do and I absorb everything that I'm learning, I'm going to be fine, and everything is going to be going according to plan. I just got to stay focused, stay calm, stay relaxed, and use my skills.
Is staying focused something that you have at all maybe struggled with throughout your athletic career?
No, to be honest with you, biggest thing for me is just not overtraining. You know, I train a lot. I mean, I love to train. This has been my life since I've been 4 years old. Life is weird if I'm not training. So the biggest thing for me with my coach is, okay, relax. You're not going to practice today. No, you're not coming into practice today. Just don't, I don't want to see you here. That's the problem that I have is don't overtrain. But luckily I have very, very good coaches. I have a great strength conditioning coach that monitors everything. Sam Calavita and Antonio, they know when I'm tired. They know, okay, how you feeling? And I'm communicating with them about how I feel. I don't like to say I'm tired, this and that, but as I get older, this is a long game. This is a long process, hard, grueling sport. So I have to listen to my body and listen to my coaches. So that, for me, it's just not overtraining. Staying focused, I'm fine. I know what I want to do. I've known that at a very, very young age that I wanted to become a world champion in MMA. And it's not a problem being focused. It's just, like I said, staying healthy.
What is the hardest part of MMA for you? Is it just merely, you know, not putting a strain on your body to where you're not going to be in that peak condition where you want to be on fight night?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I think the biggest thing is not overtraining, is just getting hurt. You know, I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to be set back months or a year. I've had to go through that before. I had ACL surgery and I was out 9 months. And that's not fun at all. I don't ever want to have to go through that again. So for me, it's just staying healthy because I don't want to miss out on the opportunity to be a world champion, to get closer and closer to that belt. For me, it's just staying healthy. I train so hard that if I take, you know, maybe one session off, I'll be okay. I'll be fine. My skills aren't going to go down. So for me, it's just not getting hurt. Knock on wood, I'm fine. Everything is good. Like I said, I listen to my coaches. I listen to my body, and I'm healthy. So that's the biggest thing in MMA is just staying healthy. You see it a lot. Guys have to pull out of fights. That's my worst nightmare. I do not ever want to pull out of a fight due to an injury. That's just, obviously shit happens, but hey, you could avoid that sometimes by saying, you know what, I need to relax. I need to take the day off. I need to just get out and do something.
In terms of you in 2018, obviously this will be your second fight in 2018. Have you laid out a game plan of what you want the rest of 2018 to be?
For sure. I mean, the biggest thing for me is just taking each fight, getting closer to that belt. I want to become a champion of the world so bad, but I just got to take it in bite-sized pieces. I know that I'm capable of winning. I got the phone call today saying this weekend you have to fight for a world title. I'm very, very confident in my abilities that I could become a world champion right now. But for me, I got to just stay focused and keep learning and winning. And taking each fight closer to that title. That's my whole goal.
Hey, Adam, man, I appreciate you taking some time out to talk to me about your fight coming up here at Bellator 199. After how last year went for you, would the term bounce back be a great way to describe this matchup for you?
Yeah, sure. Bounce back, whatever you want to call it. You know, I'm just looking to get it there and perform. You know, I try not to dwell too much on the past, but I definitely know what needs to be done coming up here May 12th.
Is it just one of those things of simply rearview mirror and you know what? Hey, what happened and everything is about Carrington Banks.
Exactly. You know, I try to absolutely learn from, you know, my mistakes and learn from past experience. But what I really have to keep my focus on is exactly that, Carrington Banks and this challenge that I have right ahead of me here.
I know it's probably easy for people outside of your camp just to kind of look at the cons, you know, of what happened last year. But for you, I'm guessing you're probably still looking at the positives of how you grew as a martial artist. How do you feel, you grew as a martial artist over the last 12 months?
You know, I got a ton of experience, especially in that Rickles fight. You know, I got to stand there for 15 minutes. And I think really, you know, my skills, I feel, have been there. And I think that my skills could have beaten both of those opponents that I lost to last year. I think what's improved dramatically is my experience and my mentality, right, is being able to show up and perform, you know. And that's what I'm looking to put on display and to really put into effect. It's just my readiness, my willingness to stick to a game plan, to adopt the game plan, and to do whatever I need to do to get that W.
I mean, is that one of the things that as you kind of have evaluate everything, is maybe it's just the minor details that maybe you just didn't do in those fights, and that really has kind of been what this camp has been about, is just those little minor things?
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, to be honest, sure, things are technique-wise, you know, technical and stuff like that, and I feel that that's always been one of my strong suits, is being technical and understanding small minor details. But, like I said, kind of mentioned before, like having the ability to adapt within inside of the cage, kind of developing that fight IQ. I feel like those are things that come with experience, and that's some valuable experience that I just gained.
Yeah, obviously, having a great fight IQ is what every fighter wants. And, you know, the term I talk about is being a smart fighter. What is your definition of a smart fighter?
Being a smart fighter just means, you know, kind of being able to exploit your opponent's weaknesses, you know, using whatever strengths that you choose to use at the right moments. For example, if I'm fighting a tough wrestler, you may not want to go out there and just wrestle all the time right away, right? It's like kind of using your strengths against their weaknesses, being able to smell the blood in the water when you hurt somebody, being able to, you know when to go, when to pull back, all those kinds of things. It's the in-the-moment decision-making. And it's the adaptation within the fight. That's my take on being a smart fighter.
Interesting you bring up tough wrestler, because some people may look at that as a characteristic of Carrington Banks. Is that your view of Carrington? Is just, hey, look, yeah, this guy's a great fighter, but obviously wrestling is what he's best at.
Sure, you know, we're in the game of mixed martial arts, so a lot of things are different. It's not a wrestling match. It's not a kickboxing match. It's not a jiu-jitsu match. It's a fight, you know, so. I do see, you know, his wrestling as probably his top strong suit, but that's not to take away from his other skills. You know, I'm looking at him as the full fighter, and I'm approaching the fight in the same way.
Do you think that people have underestimated his other abilities, and that has ultimately been a reason? I mean, one of the reasons why he has had this undefeated record at this point.
I mean, maybe. I think also he hasn't ran into somebody that has a good wrestling defense, hasn't had an answer to his kind of best weapon. I feel that, you know, because I don't have a college pedigree, my wrestling is severely underrated. So I look forward to kind of waking him up to that and seeing how he reacts when he can't, you know, necessarily get a takedown whenever he wants.
Is your wrestling ability what you believe people is the biggest trait they underestimate about you?
Yeah, most likely. You know, I think people kind of assume that I'm just a jiu-jitsu guy, you know, and to be honest, you know, a lot of people are right in that a lot of jiu-jitsu guys out there don't have good wrestling. You know, you see it time and time again. But I did grow up wrestling. You know, wrestling was my first love, and I've never shied away from the wrestling game. You know, I've continued to train my wrestling, and I'm a completely better wrestler, you know, than I ever was when I was actually wrestling. I get obviously some of the best work in the world out here at AKA. I think my wrestling is severely underrated. You know, you can see it in the Gersh fight. I took down the man that's never been taken down, you know? So, I'd have to agree with that.
When you're training jiu-jitsu, do you prefer gi or no gi?
Yeah, you could put a gun to my head. I couldn't give you a clear answer. You know, there's part of me that deeply loves the gi, and there's part of me that deeply loves the no gi. You know, coming from a wrestling background, it's like, originally I didn't want to be in the gi at all. But then once I started to kind of like understand the gi, I completely fell in love. So I love the gi, you know, but I do understand that there's a time and a place for it. Obviously the gi takes a backseat during fight camp. But, you know, teaching and development and stuff like that in the gi, I feel is of utmost importance. You know, I don't agree with people that say, you know, if you want to be an MMA fighter, don't put a gi on. You know, I think that it's really important in order to develop your details and develop your jiu-jitsu game as a whole that you practice in the gi. So I can't give you a clear-cut answer one way or another, but I think there's a time and a place for both.
San Jose, obviously a very familiar scene for you in fighting. What is the biggest pro for you in having the ability to fight in San Jose?
I just like being close to home, you know. The hometown crowd is cool, you know. I love that people support me when I'm out here. But I do appreciate not having to travel, you know, knowing where all the good food spots are, you know, just being close to my loved ones, not having to be gone, like really gone all week. Although, you know, I do prefer to stay in the hotel leading right up to the fight. I still appreciate being close to the house and not having to pack everything that I could possibly need and take it on an airplane and go somewhere far.
Yeah, you know, I'm a food guy. So if someone's coming to San Jose, what is the go-to spot that you would recommend?
Oh, well, I'm boring. You know, I'm a fighter. I got to keep it clean. I'm eating whole foods and all that kind of good stuff. So to be honest, I live in Half Moon Bay. So whenever I'm down here in AKA, I'm training, I'm working hard. So I don't do too much like splurging, but I love Nick the Greek. You know, it's a good Greek restaurant over here right by AKA. I'm always getting their gyro salads and all that kind of stuff. So I can't give you a good answer as far as mouthwatering goodness, but you know, I just know where all the good clean stuff is. That's more so what I was referring to.
Now, when we're like 2 weeks from now, what is there? I gotta imagine once the fight ends, you kind of splurge a little bit, right? Is there a go-to food item?
Yeah, absolutely. But again, that's mostly back in my hometown in Half Moon Bay. You know, there's tons of good seafood. Barber's Fish Trap is my go-to for that. Get all that good fried calamari and that kind of stuff. You know, I'm always eating pizza. Pizza is my other soft spot. So I'm always eating at Odyssey Pizzeria, which is like a little local pizza spot. It's just a gem of a spot. It's kind of, you know, I'm a basic dude. You know, I keep it pretty mellow.
Final thing, you know, the cliche we always hear in the fight game is why you love whatever the matchup is, whoever the opponent is. For you, why do you like this matchup?
I like this matchup because, well, to be honest, I like all my matchups. Anytime they give me somebody, I'm like, oh, I like that matchup. I feel that I can see weaknesses and that I can spot stuff that I can exploit, you know. And even though I didn't quite perform those before, I really like this matchup. I don't think his wrestling is going to be up to par with mine. I don't think his striking will be up to par. And clearly my jiu-jitsu is going to outwork his. So I just, you know, as tough as this guy is, I know he's going to be athletic and explosive, but I think my pace, my conditioning, and honestly, my skill set is just going to kind of outmatch him and give him a good wake up. You know what I mean? Like, I know how it was to be undefeated. So it's going to give him that first one on his record. And it'll be a good wake up for him, too, because he is a tough dude. And, you know, I respect him and I'm taking this fight very seriously. But I feel that I'll be able to capitalize and exploit him all over.
Pat, I appreciate the time, man. How's things been?
Oh, good, man. How's things with you?
Man, they're doing great on my end. No complaints for me. Obviously, this is your first matchup since September of last year. Yep. But I do know you went out to Las Vegas at the end of last year to try out for the Ultimate Fighter. You didn't make it on the show. But what was your biggest takeaway just from that experience?
I made it through all the cuts. You know what I mean? I made it all the way to the end, and then they just decided to not go with 170. So me and the other 16 guys were kind of just shit out of luck. So, yeah, it kind of sucked. Actually, it really sucked. I was pretty depressed about it, to be perfectly honest.
I guess frustration, probably another word to kind of describe that.
I had an injury after that fight, so I spent most of my prize money getting better, and then that Vegas thing came up, so I was all screwed up, and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna make it worth it, and then bought the plane ticket, the hotel, all this shit to go out to Vegas, and it didn't work out. So what can you do?
But I guess you have to look at the positives of it, the fact of, hey, I got a chance to spend time with the movers and shakers of the UFC, so if they weren't aware of me, they now are.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah, that's the positive way of looking at it. So, yeah.
You know, obviously first fight since September of last year, you mentioned about, you know, getting over some injuries. What would you say is life has been like for the past couple months?
Well, I went back to work. I had to go back to work just because of the way everything played out. You know, I was hoping to get on that show so I could have some survival money. But, you know, I have a daughter and I have a lot of bills. So
what type of job did you have to go out and get?
Welding. Yeah, I'm a welder.
Is that something that you've done for some years and just kind of was kind of, you know, something on the side?
Yeah, well, it's probably the one thing I'm the best at out of all the trades. So I can do a few, but yeah, definitely that's the one I'm the best at.
So. You're taking on Derek Boyle here. You know, one of the things you look at him, he has lost five in a row, but when you look throughout his time in MMA, you know, he has taken on tough competition, guys who have made it to the UFC or have been right there on the verge of it. As you have assessed him as an opponent, what sticks out to you about him?
He's very experienced. He's pretty much good everywhere. I don't really look at the losses. You know what I mean? This is like a last minute fight for me too, right? So I feel like this is, we're going to stack up really well with each other. And also he likes to fight and I like to fight. Like he's a warrior, right? So yeah, we're going to go out and we're going to bang it out and the better man's going to win.
In terms of a last minute fight, how much time have you had to prepare for this one?
13 years.
But in terms of when you got this fight offer?
Thursday.
Was it just kind of a simple thing of send me the contract, let's go?
Well, it's opportunity, right? Like, I had the opportunity to fight him, so I took it, you know? So, yeah. Yeah, it's a great opportunity, you know? That's the way I look at it, because I'm kind of having a hard time, you know, figuring it out and getting fights and whatnot. So this came up, and I thought I'd stack up well. We'd stack up well with each other, so I took the fight.
Do you prefer short-notice fights?
Oh, this is the first one I've taken, so I guess I'll find out.
Okay, some guys talk about, you know, hey, you don't have to overanalyze everything. You just go out there and be who you are. I mean, they talk about that. That's the pros of, I mean, I guess the negatives of it, of you only have a short amount of time to prepare for a guy. But for you, I mean, do you kind of, does that interest you about it? Like, look, let's just go out there and do this thing.
This is new territory for me. You know what I mean? I have a long time to prepare, but I'm always training, you know, even if, I said, you know, Thursday is when I started training or whatever, but that's more or less when I started dieting and doing all that jazz, you know, because I'm training for fun. If I'm not training for a fight, I'm training for fun. So I'm always at the gym.
You know? They always talk about how you're a different fighter every time you step into a competition. How would you say you're different now as opposed to September of last year?
I'm healthy. I'm healthy. That's the one positive of taking this short notice fight is I'm actually healthy, because I was hurt before I fought Yannick. Obviously I just didn't want to tell you. Couldn't tell you in the last interview, right? That turns out I'm injured, and it's probably a very stupid idea to take the fight. But this time I'm healthy.
And the thing is, as I recall in that interview, we had talked about injuries in the past you had.
Yeah, we did, and that's why I was kind of chuckling about it, you know. Like, oh, fuck, you know, I'm fucked up for this one, too. So I'm 100%, so.
In terms of being 100%, when is the last time that you feel like you were 100% health-wise?
I was 18.
I mean.
So, like, 11 years ago.
But, you know, but in the fight game, it's kind of odd to be, quote-unquote, 100%, right?
Yeah, that and that's the thing. I know my opponent's probably not 100% too, you know. Most of the guys I fought were all grueling it out. Like, even especially when I was just kickboxing, I know all of us are going into that fight banged up. We can just take our shirts off at the weigh-ins and you'll see bruises on usually both of us, you know. No one's ever 100%. And if they are, like, they're probably lying. You know, if they say they are, there's always something small nagging at them. You just got to overcome it, right? So that's what I'm good at. I'm good at overcoming adversity. So
yeah, I mean, adversity is a word that we hear a lot in the fight game. I mean, would you say injuries has been the biggest adversity?
Yeah, my opponent's not my enemy. Injury is my enemy.
I mean, have you found yourself training differently to do what you can to avoid those nagging injuries?
So, when I broke my hand, I was using my other hand and focusing on kicking, focusing on what I could do on the bag, like clinch-wise, drilling techniques and wrestling, but not actually going 100%, you know? So if I hurt something, I focus on something else. When I was in, when I had the distal fracture in my tibia, I was just focusing on my hands, you know? Like, I've had so many, if something's fucked up, I work on something else, you know? So that's what I do.
Have you visualized how you see the victory coming in this one?
No, I don't do that. Whether he's, whether he's standing at the end or not, it makes no difference as long as I get the win.
And of course, this fight is coming up on Friday, May the 19th, yep. Unified 33. Pat, man, as always, I appreciate time. And where can everybody follow you on social media?
Pat Pitt, so Pat and then PYT at that's like my Instagram, and then, you know, my name on Facebook. You can add me if you want. You know, see, I put up a lot of training videos and shit that I'm doing. So, yeah, I got Snapchat. I think it's the same. If not, I don't know what to tell you.
Daniel, there was my conversations with Aaron Pico, Adam Piccolotti, and Pat Pitlick, of course, all those fighters fighting this weekend. Of course, that now leads us into this weekend's MMA. Of course, we talked about it at the beginning of the podcast, UFC 224 and Bellator 199. You know, one of the things that we want to talk about these fight cards, and we'll kind of start off here, is our top five fights of the weekend. You know, when I look at number one, to me, there's no question in my mind what the number one fight is, and that's Jacare Souza, Kelvin Gastelum.
Absolutely, Jason. That is number one. It's one of the better fights we're going to get. You know, in 2018, that's not for a championship because, hell, you could randomly make it an interim middleweight championship, and it wouldn't make sense, but it would go just as well with some of these other decisions they've made. But absolutely, this is number one. Jacare and Gastelum, to me, is much more interesting than the main event of UFC 224 and anything on Bellator. It's pretty simple. You have two awesome, awesome middleweights in the same cage against one another, a lot on the line, and undoubtedly Jacare Gastelum's number one. And to me, there is a big-time gap between number one and number two.
Let me ask you this. Do you have two Bellator fights in your top five?
No, I was going to ask you the same question because – it seems like when you look at the Bellator card, there is stuff I'm very interested in, but that's just because, well, okay, first off, gosh dang it, you really talked me into a hold. Of course, I wanted to put Javier Ayala in my top five. You know me, I'm a big Javier Ayala fan, but I just thought it was understood that we're not. Like, it was obvious that was the top fight of the weekend, so we just weren't going to do it. So other than I think the spot we could have looked at to put a second fight in there would have been that co-main event slot between John Fitch and Paul Daly. But doesn't John Fitch just drag it down to where you can't even put that there?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. Because look, and I'll kind of relate Fitch Daly to Congo Ayala. If John Fitch and Chuck Congo win those fights, most likely it's not exactly a fan-pleasing fight. If Paul Daly and Javier Ayala win, it's likely fan-pleasing fights.
Yeah, and totally. And I tell you what, you put Paul Daly in the cage with just about any other welterweight in Bellator, and that fight probably makes it in my top five, to be completely honest with you. That's how exciting I think Paul Daly is. And I was really looking to put a second fight. I was looking through, you know, I was like, who's this Ignacio Ortiz? Is he a gem that I can put? Is there some prelim fighters? No. To me, undoubtedly the only Bellator fight you can make a case for. I guess you could make a case for Daly and Fitch. You could make a case for Piccolotti and Banks. But if you're being honest, the only Bellator fight worth putting in your top five is the main event. Now, yeah, it's not number two for me. Is that what it is for you?
No, it's not number two for me. It's number three for me. You know, look, like Aaron Pico, Lee Morrison, I'm interested in that fight just because of Aaron Pico. How the progression we see with Aaron Pico. You know, you look at Lee Morrison, yes, he has won four in a row, but you're talking about he's coming off a submission win that the fighter he beat has a record of 0-11. The opponent before that, 7-9. The opponent before that, 6-35. And then the opponent before that, 2-11. So not the greatest strength of schedule in his last four fights. Interesting to see Pico. Interested in Banks and Piccolotti. You know, obviously things have not gone the way Adam Piccolotti would like in his last two fights. Carrington Banks, a prospect at 170, now training out in Colorado as he's left South Florida. But I just wouldn't put those in my top five fights. My number two fight of the week, and this is just more because I just think this is just going to be a fun fight to watch, is John Lineker and Brian Kelleher.
I totally understand that, man. That's actually what I have at number three on my top five, and it's pretty simple. John Lineker is just one of those guys you plug in there, and you know it's going to be a dynamic fight. And Brian Kelleher, I think, is going to get the best out of Lineker when it comes to what us bloodlusting fans want to see. It's a fight that I think is – if we laid out the favorite for being fight of the night, it's got to be a heavy, heavy, heavy favorite. I think you're going to have high volume, a lot of action, and that's why it's number three for me. And you mentioned, you know, Aaron Pico to me is something that I can't miss when it comes to this weekend. That doesn't make it maybe a top five fight, but it is worth mentioning that to me, Aaron Pico is a can't-miss guy. Every time he's in the cage, I want to have my eyeballs on it. So I would like to mention that, like you said. But my number two is actually – I know it's not the sexiest matchup. Or, God, that's a poor choice of word given that I'm talking about females. It's not like the most appetizing championship contest because Raquel Pennington isn't a challenger with a lot of momentum. She's been away for a long time, and she's taking on someone who should probably be fighting Cyborg. With that being said, I still have this fight at number two because I really, really, really enjoy watching Amanda Nunes fight. I really do. And to me, that's enough to supersede maybe the excitement of Lineker Kelleher because this is a UFC bantamweight championship fight. One of the weaker championship fights we'll get. And a big reason of that is because of Amanda Nunes's dominance. But Jason, that's why I have Nunes Pennington slotted at number two for me, just because I think it's a real pleasure to watch Nunes in her reign. And again, this is a very important fight for her title reign.
Yeah, that's my number four fight. When you look at Raquel Pennington, the last time we saw her, November 12th, 2016, that unanimous decision win over Miesha Tate. And speaking of Amanda Nunes, the other day I was on the UFC YouTube channel, and I saw that they had posted Nunes's win over Ronda Rousey. So I was like, all right, I'm going to click this. I'm going to watch it. And I don't think I really noticed this, you know, when that fight actually happened. But you can see the moment Nunes landed the first punch, Ronda's face changed. Like, it was that oh crap moment. Like, oh, there is nothing I'm going to be able to do to stop this girl. And of course, it didn't last very long. But, you know, and I know a lot of people mention this, you know, man, Nunes has been on some big pay per views, you know, and she hasn't gravitated with, a bigger audience in MMA, and he kind of makes you wonder what's going to go there. So right now, Jacare Gaslam, my number one. Number two, Lineker Kelleher. I mentioned number three, Ryan Bader Kingmo. Number four is I have Amanda Nunes and Raquel Pennington. And number five, I'm going to go, and I think that this is a fight that people may think I'm kind of crazy on, Cesar Fajeda and Carl Roberson.
That's a good choice, man. Why are you going with that one, though?
I just think that you look at how Fajeda has looked recently and Roberson with his striking. I just think that's going to be a fun fight to watch.
I agree with you, and those are two highly skilled guys, especially Roberson. I really want to see what he does in his in another outing here in the UFC. So that is a good pick. That's a very smarky pick, a hipster, MMA hipster. You're on top of the trends. And my number four is the Bellator main event between King Mo and Ryan Bader. You know, it's a very interesting light heavyweight championship fight being contested in the heavyweight division. But again, those are the top two 205ers and two guys who are really skilled. So even at heavyweight, I'm interested to see what they look like on the scales. That's number four. And I totally understand. To me, there are two fights on the prelims for UFC that jump out when it comes to these are good and I'm looking forward to them. It's Ferreira, Carl Roberson, and it's Sean Strickland, Zaleski Dos Santos. Those to me are the absolute two best fights. I think the four fights on Fight Pass are pretty weak. I'm just not – the one fighter I want to see fight is Alberto Mina because he's pretty exciting, but his opponent, Ramazan Ameev, may take that out of him. But just to mention those two prelim fights, I'm going to go basic. To me, when I'm looking at filling it out, it's not very fun. But I'm just looking at the other two main card fights. Mackenzie Dern and Amanda Cooper is pretty interesting. Obviously, Mackenzie Dern has a world of potential and plenty of attention. But I'm going to go basic. You went hipster with your Ferreira Roberson. I'm going to go basic casual MMA fan. My number five fight is the two aging legends, Machida and Belfort.
Man, that's tough. That's. I feel like that could be a tough fight to watch just because of where those guys are at. Something to mention on Mackenzie Dern and Amanda Cooper. Amanda Cooper has three losses, all by submission.
I'm sure. Look, there are people the UFC knows they're taking care of, and Amanda Cooper is a step up in competition, a big one. But potentially that could be four. I get why you criticize the Belfort Machida pick. Like it's a very unpredictable fight because you don't know which fighter has regressed more, and that's the way you kind of look at it. You can't be thinking about how they looked in 2009. But
why do I see a Vitor first round victory?
Well, that's why it's there, because I just think these guys are in like that legends division where they are fighting each other at their same level. So we're going to have a knockout. But I have a weird feeling that Vitor is going to be aggressive early on and Leo is going to catch him for his own knockout win.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to kind of see how it does play out. We should note the preliminary card for the televised preliminary card for UFC 224 on FX, not FS1, on FX. You mentioned Davi Ramos with his jiu-jitsu credentials taking on Nick Hine. But yeah, I agree with you on the Fight Pass prelims, man. Nothing really sticks out to you on that one. Overall at the Bellator card, I'm going to pick a fight here that I think is definitely under the radar. And it's a guy we heard from a little while ago here on the podcast, Adam Piccolotti and Carrington Banks. These are, if you follow, MMA intently, you know who these guys are, but for, casual fan, no idea, but a matchup there of lightweights. To me, on the Bellator card, that's the under-the-radar pick I have in this one. And then under the radar on the UFC, man, I don't know if there's one that really sticks out to me.
No, there really isn't. And you nailed it with Piccolotti Banks. I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking of too. But I would just go back to that fight I already mentioned between Sean Strickland and Dos Santos. Just, Dos Santos is a guy who's now 1-4 in the – I mean, 1-4. 4-1 in the UFC with one – his only loss is split decision. And his debut was just then he's beating Akhmedov, Keita Nakamura, Lyman Good, and Max Griffin. And Sean Strickland on the other side is just a fighter who has been a major middleweight prospect on his rise up the King of the Cage, signed to the UFC in 2014, and since then only lost two, and he has won six fights coming off a unanimous decision win over Court McGee that was overturned due to a miscalculation in scores. Kind of forgot about that. But for Strickland, I mean, his only losses in the UFC come against Usman and Ponzinibbio, which aren't bad losses at all. So on a prelim that is really lacking a whole lot, the under-the-radar fight to me is Dos Santos and Strickland, just because now at welterweight, Strickland is a big-time prospect. Dos Santos is as well, and I think you can look at the winner of this one being pretty interesting in that 170-pound weight class.
You know, one of the things about both these fight cards, I do wonder how many people will just bypass on the UFC pay-per-view and just watch Bellator because Bellator's on Paramount as opposed to having to fork over, you know, $65 to watch the UFC pay-per-view.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a portion, but not a big one, just because I think if you're a mixed martial arts fan, you got to figure out a way to watch Gaslam Jacare. That to me is the absolute draw this weekend. That is a fight that I'm interested in, and it's a very, very important one for both guys just because both of them are coming off monumental knockout wins after kind of struggling lately. These are two guys that are just trying to ascend that middleweight ladder, and it's not like – I mean, Jacare looked amazing against Derek Brunson, and at 38 years old, he could just be now entering his prime. But I just think if you're a mixed martial arts fan, even though you have the option of just watching one fight card, you're going to find a way to watch Jacare versus Gastelum.
I mean, and after Jacare's loss to Robert Whitaker, I think I kind of discredit him a little bit. But, man, I like Kelvin Gastelum in this fight.
Why is that?
I just think it, with his speed and his boxing ability, I just, you know, I was watching a video Shale Son did this week where, you know, he was just basically talking about, you know, look, you know, Kelvin's just a fighter, man. This guy, you know, I mean, he's extremely undersized at 185 pounds. You know, to me, God, I mean, if the UFC had a 175-pound weight class, Kelvin Gastelum is so ideal for that weight class. Because, I mean, look, you question whether making 170 is what's in Kelvin's best interest. But I just think his speed advantage. Now, look, if this fight goes to the ground, I think he's in trouble.
Undoubtedly. But you do bring up a good point in that this is a guy with really good boxing. We've seen the power. All of his more recent wins have come the knockout victory over Bisping, the knockout win over Tim Kennedy. This guy's got power. He's got the ability to finish fights. I like Jacare, though. I think this one goes the distance, and I think Jacare's more well-rounded game, obviously big-time advantage in the grappling, potentially in the clinch. Also, his stand-up isn't too shabby. I think he's going to outpoint Gastelum. But it is a coin flip fight. I don't think you can criticize anyone for any pick. And then I think we're obviously both taking Amanda Nunes, right? But this is a nice little story for Raquel Pennington. Just she's going to have a chance to be champion, which is maybe not something you think she would have gotten just because it could have been so easy for the UFC to book Amanda Nunes versus Chris Cyborg instead of Nunes Pennington. And now she has this chance, and it's not a story a lot of people, a lot of casual fans know, but it is a nice little story that she has come back from an accident and is now challenging for the title. This is going to be absolutely the toughest challenge in her career, and it's a very abnormal fight prep for her. So just think about it. You've been away for over a year in the cage, and your first entry back is the ability to achieve all your goals to contend for the Bantamweight Championship. So I expect her to lose probably in the first round, but if she does pull off that upset, it would be one hell of a story.
I just looked at the betting odds for the very first time, and we're recording this here on early Tuesday evening. According to bestfightodds.com, on 5 dimes, Amanda Nunes is a 10-1 favorite.
Yeah, that's insane. And not insane, like, as in that doesn't make sense. That's just – that speaks to how good she is. Because guess what? Raquel Pennington's the second-ranked fighter in their division.
Hey, I mean, Nunez win by TKO KO plus 120. I feel like you're better off taking that prop bet.
Totally. That's a massive, massive – yeah, you should totally do that. But I would stay away from the plus 1,000. And, I mean, who in this women's bantamweight division, now that Shevchenko's at flyweight, would Nunez not be a 10-1 favorite against? I mean, it would be practically everyone aside from, I guess, Holly Holm.
That's the big problem the UFC faces at women's 135 is developing title challengers. You know, that's you know, they've struggled with that, you know, with not having Ronda Rousey around. You know, looking at some other betting odds, not a lot really sticks out to me. Jacare Souza about a 1.5-1 favorite over Kelvin Gastelum. Mackenzie Dern -230. You know, and of course, part of that storyline with Mackenzie Dern is the fact of she was, what was the terminology? She was invited not to return to the MMA lab out in Arizona. She's been training in California. Kind of makes you wonder how that what the real story ever kind of comes out about that one. But you know, just looking at the betting odds, nothing. You know, I mean, obviously the Amanda Nunes one really sticks out to you, but not much sticks out to you.
Well, you mentioned you maybe saw Vitor winning by knockout. He's at +235, +210.
Yeah, that's a nice one. Bellator, as we're recording this podcast, there's only one betting line out there, and that is for the main event. I tell you, I like +285 in King Mo.
Yeah, I feel like this fight's a lot closer than that, but without looking at the odds, Bader to me is a clear pick. Again, he's the guy I've been proclaiming will win this heavyweight tournament. But look, man, King Mo is – King Mo is very similar to Bader's wrestling. Really good wrestler. Probably not as good. Man, that stand-up game's going to be pretty interesting too, actually. This fight just rings much closer than like Ryan Bader being a -345 favorite.
I will say this, and if people have not watched the first episode of Bellator Countdown, Bader versus King Mo, I thought Bellator did an incredible job of telling both fighters' stories with Ryan, with his family, his wife, his kids, and then of course King Mo basically just really speaking his mind, essentially. I thought they did a really good job. If you haven't seen that video, it is up on themareport.com. But, you look at this, the winner of this matchup, and after you saw the way, Mitrione Nelson it played out, especially with Roy's ability to get Matt to the ground, I mean, the winner of this fight may very well be favored to get Matt Mitrione in the semifinals.
It's what I've been telling you, Jason. It's what I've been telling you. And I said it first, Ryan Bader.
You did. No, you did. But
look at Fedor is going to win this whole damn tournament. Look at it. This is going to happen. It's going to be amazing.
God, I mean, that would be interesting. What is the betting line for Shael Sonnen and Fedor Emelianenko? Has that line come out yet? I'm looking down here. I'm looking. Fedor is -260.
Wow, can you imagine that?
You might as well just lay your money down right now at -260 because that's probably going to be the best number you get.
I like the random odds. I like how they already have odds on the Greg Hardy fight.
I just saw that.
That's something stick out, right? You have like a million Conor McGregor future events, and then Greg Hardy's randomly there.
And that's it's a five dimes line. So that means you could go to five dimes right now and place that bet.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. That's crazy, man. They weren't, but maybe they were right. I'm putting them on Contender Series because.
And as I recall, I believe he's going to be on the season debut of the Contender Series.
Is Snoop Dogg still commentating?
I haven't heard, but this is the crazy thing about this. Greg Hardy, it's his pro debut. He's taken on a guy who has six pro fights, who's 5-1, and it's only losses against Chase Gormley.
I'm going to have to start watching some Brandon Man of War sales tape because I might just put a crap load of money on him and try and make some money here.
Man, that makes you wonder, man, if you're in the Greg Hardy management business, Why do you put him up against a guy who's 5-1?
I don't know, man. You got me beat. But hey, he's a massive favorite, which is kind of crazy.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah, did we not learn from Aaron Pico's debut?
Like, he almost blindly just put money on Brandon Sales.
Yeah, exactly. You look at the competition he's faced, his record already, and the lack of pro fights for Greg Hardy, it's like a no-brainer.
Man, that's just... That's a baffling line. I mean, that's just baffling.
Look, this is what we do. We just we randomly search best fight odds and we give you guys free money. Although I don't advise you to take any of my gambling advice, but still.
No, and just speaking of the Contender Series and MMA-today.com has done a great job of of reporting various fights, and on the season debut, which is June 12th, Greg Hardy versus Brandon Sales. I'm guessing that's probably going to be the main event. Chris Curtis is going to be on there, taking on Sean Lally. Will Santiago taking on Kevin Holly. Rico Desculo taking on Montel Jackson. Some other notable names I think people will recognize, especially if you follow the regional scene. Ryan Spann, he's going to be on the June 19th. T. Edwards, the guy that I've interviewed before, he'll be on the June 26th card. Gregor Bello, get another shot in the Contender Series. He'll be on that same event. Julian Arosa is going to be on that June 26th. On July 3rd, Bavon Lewis, who literally could be the twin of John Jones if you watch him fight. He's on there. Of course, he was on that last year. Jalen Turner, a guy that I've talked to in the past, a Bellator vet, he is on that one as well. Juan Adams is going to be on an episode. Also, I don't know if you saw this, they're doing a Brazilian version of the Contender Series. Augusto Sakai, the ex-Bellator heavyweight, is on this, the Brazilian version of the Contender Series.
So what's this? Did they find a random house in Brazil to do this? Like, I don't understand what makes this different. Is it just a theme night?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think they're taping it like over like 3 days or something.
Is it going to be in Portuguese? Yeah.
It'll be for the Brazilian audience.
The Brazilian Fight Pass. Okay, I guess that makes sense. Yeah, Gus is a guy, man. He's a guy who's just constantly on random Bellator cards.
I want to say he was like 4-1 or 5-1 in Bellator.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. He was 4-1-1 with a draw to Dan Charles. And his last Bellator fight was a loss to Chet Congo. Not many notable wins.
You know how we got to end this podcast?
How?
Has my man had a fight in the past 2 weeks?
Oh, geez, you're right. Is Tony Lopez, is he on the Brazilian?
Oh, man, Tony Lopez should be on the Contender Series.
He should be on every episode.
He'd probably win on the Contender Series too. He's his last fight was March 28th, and according to Tapology, his next fight's not until June 8th.
Which that's coming up. I feel like there definitely should be a fight in between them. When you look at how many times, he fought 3 times in March, and I just feel like we may have jinxed him. Like as soon as we talk about him, we have a microscope, and he just isn't fighting.
It's just crazy the amount of fights he's had. Just crazy.
I can't wait till we can celebrate another Tony Lopez fight. Yeah. That's what I'm looking forward to. Maybe Golden Boy MMA can do it.
Yeah, they probably would. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, comes out every Wednesday. Of course, I'll have some coverage of the UFC and Bellator cards coming up this weekend. Of course, next Wednesday, we'll be back to recap everything that happened at Bellator 199 and UFC 224. And then, of course, next week we got the UFC card in Chile, headlined by Damian Maia and Kamaru Usman. So we'll start to get you ready for that fight card. Of course, as always, you can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. And of course, this podcast is always available every Wednesday morning on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
If everybody in the class is struggling with something, then the teacher's job is to maybe go back and teach it again because there's some problems. If there's one or two or a handful of those that don't get it and everybody else gets it, then the way to make that work is you've got to pull those students offside and spend extra time with them. Not as punishment, but as extra teaching to get them up to speed to be able to then grow and go to the next step and the next lesson. Football is about lessons. It's building a lesson on top of a lesson on top of a lesson. So if you've got certain guys that struggle with certain things assignment-wise, you've got to spend that time to get them up to speed so that it doesn't hold the rest of the group back, and then you got to get them up and going. And then, of course, the physical element. Some people are not physically good enough to be as capable to play as well. And that is important to know, because then you have to get somebody that is more capable and that is better.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.